Kildare Today
with Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Lovely story, Liam Kenny. Happy New Year to you, Liam. Look forward to many more of your great, great historical interludes during the year here. And Liam says this morning, Clem, Ciara and Owen, welcome back for 2022, a year full of great anniversaries. Beginning today, January 5th, it's the centenary of the death on board ship of the great polar explorer, the Kildare polar explorer, Sir Ernest Shackleton, who was born at Kilkee between Athy and Castledermot. And what an incredible story that is about Ernest Shackleton and his great polar march, by the way, across, was it the Georgia Sea, as it's called, in order to help rescue his colleagues. That was after the home ship, if we'll call it that, got caught in ice. It's one of the great, great enduring adventures of all time, Owen. And I think we'll have Liam on focus this afternoon.
Yeah, or we might even get the Shackleton Museum down, of course, in Athy to come on and have a chat with us. But I just finished up a book by Sir Ranulph Fiennes, who wrote about Ernest Shackleton.
Yeah.
And what an incredible man he was. He went on a number of different expeditions, but the one you're talking about is the Endurance. There was also the Discovery and the Nimrod as well that he went on, and you know, just some of the stories that came out of those expeditions were incredible.
All right, maybe you could have that chat then with Liam Kenny, if you get him on focus this afternoon, about the great Ernest Shackleton, because given that you've read Ranulph Fiennes' book in regards to that incredible man, one of the great heroes of our exploration, often forgotten, but of course celebrated and commemorated every year at the end of October, November in Athy at the Heritage Centre. Margaret Walsh and the team have they have a great exhibition around the clock daily throughout the year. If you can get access to that, have a look at it. You'll see much more about Ernest Shackleton. And once again, regarding antigen tests and the price gouging that might be going on with them, once again, says a listener, it's money, Clem. If you you pay for a PCR test, you will get it done that day and results back by the evening time. By the way, I've heard prices to get a private PCR test had a relation heading back to the UK over Christmas, and we charged €135. Ah, that certainly hurts in terms of adding to the cost of Christmas travel to and fro, and that'll be an ongoing thing, I think, well into the future as well. What about this, though? If you're a cancer patient, hidden among your Christmas mail in your letterbox this year, you might find a debt collector's letter. Let's find out from who, because we're joined by Paul Gordon, who's Policy and Public Affairs Manager with the Irish Cancer Society. Good morning, Paul. Happy New Year to you, and welcome to Kildare Today. Thank you. Now, without a medical card or private health insurance, one must pay €80 for each chemotherapy session or radiotherapy session, up to a maximum of €800 a year. People have to pay that. If you don't have a medical card, and maybe if you don't have health insurance or whatever, what's going on with letters regarding debt collectors then?
Well, this is an issue we've been highlighting for a number of years, and the health service has been quite slow to respond to. These patients without medical cards or private health insurance, as you mentioned, are quite financially vulnerable, and they have to pay €80 per treatment session, up to a maximum of €800 per year. And what happens once that bill may be not paid, someone might have forgotten about it in the course of their treatment, and all the and all the frustration and the struggles they have with that, and 7 weeks after their initial bill has been sent, that is likely followed up with a debt collection letter from a private debt collection agency. So the HSE has a practice whereby they say they have a statutory obligation to collect debt, and patients are being hit with these debt collection letters, which is really worrying. It hits patients often at a very, very vulnerable time. Some people may be at a real low point in their lives, both physically and emotionally, but also financially.
I think that's a given, Paul. If you're diagnosed with cancer, that's, we'll say, hugely overwhelming. On the one hand, if you're going through chemotherapy or radiotherapy, I know people who have done it. I have a family member going through it at the moment, and how that can play havoc with you psychologically and certainly physically. And then you have a case. I mean, if we accept that the people who don't have a medical card or who don't have health insurance are that much touted middle group that can't claim anything and get caught to pay for everything. Now, surely, whatever about the health, the HSE's so-called statutory requirement to gather debt, surely, you know, the human element has to come into play here. And you're not going to start landing debt collector firms on people who are so vulnerable, because these debt collector firms have only one mission in life, to extract your money.
Absolutely, and I think we certainly see it as a failure of the health system to really demonstrate compassion when people are facing a huge vulnerability. As you say, I suppose it is that group that is considered the squeezed middle, people who may just be out of reach for the financial the means test for the medical card, and who simply can't afford private health insurance. We know from our own research that cancer patients face a huge burden of a huge financial burden. So post-diagnosis, people often on average pay an extra €750 a month in expenses at a time when they're facing big losses in income of around €1,500 a month. And, you know, the additional €800 for 10 treatment sessions can really be something that leaves people in a vulnerable financial situation, a vulnerable emotional situation. It can leave them really feeling like they're on the brink. And, I mean, we really have to consider, as you say, the compassion demonstrated by the health service, or the lack of compassion demonstrated by the health service in actually operating this policy. So this really does target people at a vulnerable time. We've heard of people who may be getting these letters and maybe getting calls when they've just gotten maybe further bad news or news that they need further treatment. And we had even heard from one person who the first person she told said uttered the words "I have cancer" to was a debt collection agent, and she did that clearly out of frustration. She just couldn't understand why she was being targeted, and we believe that this practice absolutely needs to end.
Yeah, and if we take it that Rachel Morrow, I see your Director of Advocacy, in a recent article pointing out that we at the Irish Cancer Society know from our research on the real cost of cancer how crippling it can be. On average, cancer patients face a hike in expenses of over €750 a month at a time when they lose €1,500 a month in income. These people are in a life and death situation. Their income is probably gone, on the basis that they're out of work. Whether they have sick leave entitlement or not is another thing. But certainly, the amount of money they have to spend on medication and everything else compromises not just the cancer sufferer, Paul, but indeed their entire family is under threat financially and psychologically and under pressure here.
That's correct. And I mean, we've obviously heard of people in very dire financial situations as a result of their treatment, people who required to borrow money either from family or financial institutions. And I think we must remember that when people, they face financial costs from a cancer diagnosis, it's not just the year or two they may be going through treatment. Often it follows them around as kind of a debt burden for years afterwards because of the huge costs that a cancer diagnosis piled on top of them. That can be from things like additional modifications to the home. It can be one-off costs on a new wig. It can be, you know, as you mentioned, medical expenses and many, many more things. Increased heating bills as a result of feeling cold more when you're going through treatment. Things that you often wouldn't consider before you get a cancer diagnosis, but that you quickly realise, yeah, when you do get that diagnosis. And we certainly believe that cancer patients who are going through treatment for basic cancer treatment, in most developed health systems, they will not face charges of this kind. So there's two things that we want to see happen. Firstly, for the HSE to stop this practice of chasing patients, which is really punitive and is something, I suppose, from it seems like something from the dark ages that really shouldn't be happening to cancer patients. And secondly, that the inpatient charges that are levied on these people who don't have a medical card and don't have private health insurance should be abolished by the minister. This was a recommendation of this launch care report back in 2017, and the can has been kicked on this issue for far too long, and we need to see progress on it.
On that note, I think if somebody turned up at my door, and we often see these debt collectors on television evicting people and stuff like that, nobody's been evicted here, but I think if I were in the position where I'd been diagnosed with cancer and a debt collector turns up at my door, I'm struggling enough, I would just slam the door in front of them and say, look, go away. There seems to be an element of the Department of Health saying, well, the HSE have to do this, and the HSE saying we have to do this because the department says we have to do this, but as the Irish Cancer Society is saying, is it morally acceptable that people who are diagnosed with a life-threatening condition are being pursued, given what Paul has pointed out here, that originally in Sláintecare, provision was made that these inpatient charges would not apply. Policy and Public Affairs Manager with the Irish Cancer Society, Paul Gordon, thank you for joining us this morning, Paul.
Thank you, Clem. Thank you very much.
And we wish you luck in your ongoing campaign in terms of dealing with that as well. Oh, debt collectors, that was a new one on me in regards to it. I understand, look, how hospitals need money to run, but pursuing patients whose illness could be terminal, but at the very least is most distressing. And I speak from ongoing knowledge of that and at the present time of the impact it can have on family. And to be pursuing people who just don't have the wherewithal to either have a medical card or to pay health insurance, given the huge costs of health insurance at the moment. Right, I know that the charges are capped at 800 a year, max, and many of you will say out there, well, surely people can come up with 800 if it's about life-saving treatment. But do you need debt collectors at your door? Are there other ways of doing this? Fiona Loughlin, Fianna Fáil Senator, good morning to you. Brief comment on that maybe, Fiona, given that you're a member of a government party?
Absolutely. Good morning, Clem. Look, I agree with your assessment on it. I just think that anybody going through cancer, going through the diagnosis, treatment, they're at their most vulnerable. It's a very, very difficult time for themselves and their family. And I think the last straw for many people would be that opening the door to have somebody there who is only doing their job, but it's chasing down a debt when you're at your lowest.
Do you think you might canvass your party colleague, Stephen Donnelly, on this issue?
I will, of course, because when I first heard it being aired last week, I really felt this is wrong. As a country, we shouldn't be going down this road. And absolutely, of course, I will.
All right. What you want to talk with us is slightly more positive, well, a lot more positive, I hope, this morning. The income ceiling for a single applicant is to be expanded. This is the local authority home loan scheme. Details, Fiona?
Absolutely. Well, look, this is one of a suite of measures that government have put in place in terms of supporting home ownership and supporting secure accommodation for those who maybe are not in a position to buy their own home. So this is one particular scheme and it replaces the Rebuilding Ireland home loan. So essentially what this is proposing to do, Clem, and I think it's a really, really, really important one. Firstly, the income ceiling for a single applicant will rise to €65,000. So basically what that means is that somebody on their own who would find it very, very difficult to be able to get a mortgage, and I was one of those people buying a home on my own and I know how difficult it is, that will now rise to €65,000 in terms of being able to get a loan through your local authority, which obviously is managed nationally.
So I can earn up to 65,000 and still be eligible for a loan. That's a rise of 15,000 from what it was.
It is, and what it also does is it gives a fresh start. So not alone, say, a single person who has never had a house before, but if you are divorced or separated or indeed have had a situation where you are bankrupt and insolvent, before you couldn't apply for this loan, but now you can. So it gives a fresh start principle to those who were not eligible to do this before. There also, it removes a limitation of 175 square metres on the size of the property, and it can be a property that can be purchased or it can be self-built. That's if somebody, of course, is lucky enough to get planning permission, which is rare enough at this stage. And it also brings down the percentage that you pay back by 25%.
All right.
So all of those four elements are I think, really, really important in terms of helping people. So the process is that this is for somebody who cannot get a bank mortgage. So they need to have proof from two different financial institutions that they have been turned down. They then go to their local authority, which of course in this case is Kildare, and can apply for the newly expanded local authority home loan there.
All right, that's very good news. And Fiona, finally, to revert to what we talked at the top, you will make representations to your party colleague, Stephen Donnelly, about this, because to me it seems morally reprehensible that people who are under a threat of death, possibly from cancer, even though there are many positive treatments for it now, should have to be dealing, while dealing with the physical and psychological devastation of that, should have be confronted at their door by debt collectors.
No, I completely agree, because the emotional trauma of dealing with that without having to deal with that whole horrible, you know, financial situation, and someone coming to the door, and before an hour passes, I will be in contact with Stephen Donnelly in relation to this.
Fianna Fáil Senator Fiona O'Loughlin, thank you for that, Fiona. And
Happy New Year to you.
And my Happy New Year to you too. And the good news indeed that the single applicant eligibility for a local authority housing grant has now been raised from 50,000 a year income to 65,000 as outlined by Fiona.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Now, we're going to be talking to the National Ambulance Service in a moment. They have deep concerns about capacity at the moment. But a couple of more messages coming in to have a look at. Morning, all. It's a pity there is not even a plaque to this great man in Kilkee. We're talking about Ernest Shackleton, of course. No information in Kilkee Castle. We visitors were looking for it during the year. Yes, actually, that is a very good point. Kilkee Castle Hotel, which is a hotel now, and as I say, I played soccer out there for Kilkee. And what a great team. And hello to all my former colleagues from the Lawlers, the Hickeys, the Murphys, the Deers, and especially there was about five Farrell brothers as well, and many others whom I enjoyed so many times. Yes, in fact, but there's a wonderful statue to Ernest Shackleton in the town of Athy. So listener, if you're looking for that, if you pop into Athy, there's a fantastic statue in Emily Square of Ernest Shackleton right beside the Heritage Centre, and you could drop into Margaret Walsh and the team there. They have an exhibition all year round of Ernest Shackleton's polar expeditions. And a reminder again, this afternoon on Ciara Focus, on Kildare Focus with Ciara Noble, where we'll be joined by historian Liam Kenny, because this is the anniversary of Ernest Shackleton's death. And thank you again, Liam. You're a mine of information. Always keep us so well advised in relation to that. And just before I go to the National Ambulance Service, I've had an email as well. We've had an email from Peggy O'Dwyer, Nurse Peggy O'Dwyer, and Kildare County Councillor says, good morning, Clem. As a member of the Regional Health Forum, I have repeatedly highlighted this practice. This is of debt collectors calling to people's doors who have been diagnosed with cancer because the HSE want their money for the treatment that they received. I wonder if the National Cancer Control Office might give a response. Well, we look out for that, Peggy. We'll get Owen on the ball. I think the difficulty also may be that our IT system does not recognise illness. In my opinion, patients should be allocated a medical card once a diagnosis of cancer is made and reviewed accordingly. The application process is time consuming and many families give up even applying. You know who we might get on this? John Wall, air traffic controller from County Clare. John has been on the programme with us over a dozen times in the past year regarding his campaign for medical cards to be given automatically to people whose cancer diagnosis is terminal. Now, Peggy is making the point it should be given to everybody, and I'm inclined to agree with that. So, Peggy, we will follow up with that today as regards maybe featuring it on tomorrow's programme as well, and maybe get John Wall on that as well. Meanwhile, Ted Kenny joins us, and Ted is SIPTO Ambulance Sector Organiser. Good morning, Ted.
Good morning, Kim. How are you doing?
We have been talking about that associated topic whereby we've learned that the HSE sends out debt collectors to knock on the doors of people who have had cancer treatment, chemotherapy or radiotherapy, looking for money. which for their treatments and stuff like that. But that's a debate will continue tomorrow. You have concerns, along with the Irish Ambulance Representative Council, you're expressing concerns over what? What's Level 3 all about?
Level 3 is in relation to the capacity to be able to answer, we'll say, calls within the, within, I suppose, nationally. Due to the Omicron variant that's out there at the moment and the surge that happened over Christmas, where approximately anything, and this varies on a daily basis, anything between 7 and 10% of ambulance personnel are unavailable because of that variant.
Right. Well, we know at the moment there are, you're probably impacted like everybody else by COVID on your own members.
Correct. Correct. And that's the issue in relation to, I mean, there's a number of issues. I mean, the COVID element is one, and especially over the Christmas period where the new variant has seemed to be very contagious. And not only ambulance personnel, but health staff in general across the entire hospital groups have been actually out and been affected by it. And that has reduced staffing, and not only in the National Ambulance Service, but throughout the HSC.
Ted, the whole area, we'll come back to that particular concern in a moment, but many times in the programme here, we've had people raising concerns about the delay in ambulances arriving. Now, we're not blaming the members of the ambulance service for that. What people were blaming is the way the ambulance service is administered in this country, and that you can call for an ambulance and it can come from maybe not just one county away, but a number of counties away.
That's quite true. That is the system that's in operation at the moment. We're in negotiations with management nationally to try and resolve those issues. Some progress has been made, and there's a lot more to be done. But yes, it's quite true. I mean, what they will do is that when a call, when someone rings for an ambulance, puts in a 999 call or a 121 call, it goes into one or two control rooms, either in Talla, the centralised control in Talla, or in Ballyshannon. They then will dispatch the next available ambulance. Now, that could take, for example, if someone's looking for an ambulance salvage, it actually could come from Tipperary.
We've had cases where an ambulance for Kildare has come from Cavan. We've had incidents whereby, you know, ambulances have come from Waterford to Carlow, to Kildare or whatever. Surely that is not tenable, that kind of service, is it?
Well, it's not tenable, but the problem that we have at the moment is at the moment the National Ambulance Service are doing a capacity review, which is going to highlight a shortage of the staff, anything to the region of, I believe, anything between 1,500 and 2,000 staff, and the shortage of anything between 100 and 150 ambulances. Now, that will be concluded I think by the end of this month, in January. And we've asked the government, and we were in the Public Directors Committee on Health in relation to making sure that, when that capacity review is published, that the government make the funding available to increase staffing and increase the amount of ambulances on the road.
All right, nobody will argue with that point. Now, there are four, as I understand it, there are four levels of service by which under which the ambulance service operates. You are now at level 3, which is that quite rare to be up at that level?
It is, Sodom. It is very rare. It's very rare.
And what happens then if you're asked to go to level 4? What would that entail?
I'll be honest, we were never in that situation before, so what it actually entails, I wouldn't be 100% certain, but it's a level that we don't want to see, to be quite honest, because I think it'd be detriment to the population in this country for those people who are looking for an ambulance.
And outside of the National Ambulance Service, have we not got external providers of ambulances, private ambulances, that private ambulance services? The Army operates an ambulance service, the Fire Service operates an ambulance service, and there are voluntary services here and there around the country. Are they being used to the maximum?
They're being used as the need arises under Level 3. They have been sought, and we have situations where both the Fire Service, the Army and the privates have been in operation, and I believe National Ambulance Service over the last week have been in consultation with the voluntaries as well to utilise them in wherever there is a shortfall.
And what response are you getting, if any, to that particular call? Let's use all the services that are available, not just the National Ambulance Service.
Well, it, I mean, the amount of, we say, public representatives that are calling for that, you know, is happening at the end of the day. I mean, at the end of the day, the National Ambulance Service has to provide a service for the public, and we have to make sure that anyone that's looking for an ambulance gets an ambulance in a timely manner. And in the current level of level three, if that means utilisation of outside forces, well, then that's accredited to fall and that's accounted for.
But meanwhile, you're extremely concerned about the capacity to meet the requirement at present.
Yes, we are, and there's a number of issues. I mean, there's a number of issues in relation to the shortfall of staff. I mean, if we look at the National Ambulance Service in Ireland, a lot of it is modelled on Scotland. And in the last 10 years, Scotland have grown their ambulance service to 5,000 staff, where in Ireland we're still at 2,000. And it's like for like regions as such in relation to the amount of population and the geographical spread. So there's been very little investment in Ireland. And there's fierce credit due to ambulance personnel in Ireland during these times, because they have stepped up to the plate on more than one occasion in the last 2 years, where they've made themselves available for overtime, they've done extended duty. They're coming back early from COVID. Once they're tested negative, they're back. They don't, I mean, the testing regime is that you're tested, and that's you're tested over a period of time. Okay. They come back and they wear full PPE. And so huge credit goes to them in the current climate for the work they're doing at the moment to keep the ambulance service running nationally.
Indeed, with that level 3 surge capacity due to extreme pressure putting on the National Ambulance Service, a cause for concern of SIPTU and the Irish Ambulance Representative Council as well. Ted Kenny is SIPTU's Ambulance Sector Organiser. Ted, thank you for joining us in Kildare today, this morning.
Thank you.